The first thing you got to do is, I do think it's important you have your record, because that will determine a lot of things. It's something, if you don't have any basis right now, well, maybe, you know, again, you know, U-Visa, something happens, well, really nothing happens to you, but something was to happen, like an assault or somebody robs you or something. Hey, you have a police report, that may open the door for you. Now we just need to look at your record and you file and we'll just start moving, right? So getting the record is something that I tell individuals, do it, you know, get a lawyer to do this. Yes, in our communities, there is a lot of, in the Latino Mexican community, called the notarios, there's a lot of people who do this type of work, but they don't do a very good job. You have to be professional. I'd rather you go to a licensed professional who can really just do this, because there is also a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation and truthfully fraud. This is just fraud with issues.
Hello, family. You are listening to Concrete Pastures Podcast. I am Nancy Mulemwasisi. Thank you so much for tuning in today. For anyone who is new on our platform, this is a space that allows myself and others to share our stories as we deconstruct the world's view of an immigrant status. We unlike the joys, the laughs, and the bravery that being a dreamer brings. So subscribe, like, share, and stay a while as we dive into today's episode. I am super excited. I guess today. Last time I think I sat down with an immigration lawyer was last year. Was it? Last year, yeah. I sat down with an immigration lawyer. We had a lot of questions that buzzed after that. And today we're sitting down with another immigration lawyer, and he's going to be giving us four different perspectives on what's going on. It's always great to be updated on what's happening in the US of A, immigration-wise. For anybody, again, this episode, for those that are curious and want to get a better understanding of what immigration is offering and how it actually works, the ins and the outs and the current affairs of immigration, this episode is definitely for you. Yes, I'm talking about Hector Quiroga. He is an immigration attorney, like I said, and the CEO of Quiroga Law Office, PLLC. He has dedicated much of his life to helping thousands of undocumented families improve their quality of life. Hector also immigrated from Colombia to the United States in January of 2000. And since then, he has worked hard to fulfill goals and impact many people's lives. Welcome, Hector. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Thanks for your audience to tuning in and listen. There's a few words from us.
This is amazing. I'm so excited to learn what's happening in the immigration space. But before we get there, obviously we want to give our audience and a taste of who you are. What got you to come into America? What are your fond memories, honestly, from Colombia? What do you remember growing up in Colombia?
Colombia is fun. Colombia is a very fun place. I think Colombia is the country with most holidays of the world. I think they had like 52 holidays, I swear. It seems like it seems like it. It really does. I think between historical dates and also Catholic dates and then dates of national importance, that's ended up being quite a bit, which is kind of great. I remember they spend a lot of time with family. There is that extra day of rest, which is very different from the American experience, right? It's very different from like you just work. And it gets worse when you become a lawyer, right? Like lawyers bill like every 6 minutes, right? It's like, oh my gosh, it's just like you gotta be clock, right? But Colombia was just relaxed and fun, and people have fun, and people love to party, people love to dance. The diversity of the food is just delicious, right? I miss, this is funny, insider tip, we're known for fruit and for juices. Like we really have this huge industry with juices and the natural juices. And when you go, I think most people, I tell them, hey, go do me a favor, have a couple of juices, and they come back, they just can't believe it. They want to go back and have some more juice. So it's a great country, very happy people. We do have kind of a little bit of a bad reputation for what happened in the 80s and 90s. States with all the drug cartels and all of that stuff. Mm. But that's been largely, it still happens today, of course, but that has been largely put behind. I think Colombia has gotten a little bit better at what comes to that, and there's still conflict. But that's more of the media, right? When you go, you really don't feel unsafe. You don't really feel like it's a bad place. There are bad places, of course, in the country, which in the Department of State tells you where not to go. For most of Bogota, Medellin, Cali, kind of the main areas, it's actually pretty safe.
Oh, lovely. No, thank you for, you know, giving us that picture. So you came here in 2000. So what got you, you know, leaving the beautiful country of Colombia?
Well, I came to study English. I wanted to study English. My dad is a lawyer. My mom is an attorney. My grandpa was a lawyer. I kind of come from a family of attorneys. And so the idea was I would come to the U.S., study English, and I would return back to Colombia, and then I would make my career over there. I always wanted to be a lawyer. I think my dad, at least, kind of hoped I wasn't. He kind of felt that, you know, there's other professions. There's certainly no pressure there. There was pressure, and I think for us immigrants, there's pressure in our countries to go to school and do something, right? You go to school, you got to be an architect or an engineer
or a doctor or a lawyer.
Those things count. Everything else, that's not school. You're just messing around, right? I am sure from your culture, it's very similar, right?
Same.
So there was an expectation, clearly, to be a professional. But that was kind of my choices, really. So I didn't need that. I always knew I wanted to be a lawyer. I was born a lawyer. I think if I'm not a lawyer, I'd probably sell shoes. And I say that because that was my first profession in the States. I sold shoes at a Payless shoe store. I did that for a little bit while I was kind of getting off the ground in the beginning. I started washing dishes when I came and unloading trucks and kind of slowly worked my way through school and put my way through college and then eventually the law school. But I think that was important, the expectation, right? And so what was very interesting to me is that I come from a country of a lawyer. I am white. I'm a white Latino. And so, and Colombia is pretty diverse. In Colombia, it's about 20% white, 20% mestizo, 20% indigenous. I mean, you see a whole gamut. And we see ourselves as Colombians. It's very interesting. We don't really see color like they do in America. It was a very interesting cultural shock for me because I almost overnight, I was a minority, you know, and I was placed as a minority, right? So when I started, I didn't speak the language in 2000, and so I was put to work. I had to find a job very quickly, so I was put to work on the dorms of the University of Texas where I came, and I was washing dishes there, and I was doing that. But I was very quickly put into the Latino, you know, the people, the Spanish speakers go here, the African Americans go here, right, and then the white people will go here. And it was very interesting because it was cultural. It wasn't like I gotta say, they told me to be there. It just naturally, everybody sort of started gravitating. And oh, you speak Spanish, you're from Colombia, you're one of us. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, you're one of us. Like, I don't get this, right? And it was important for me because I wanted to learn English. So because I wanted to speak English, I wanted to be with the English speakers. Yeah. So I was trying to be with the other part of the crew, but it was kind of like, why are you coming here? You need to go back over there, right? And so that was kind of the eye-opening as I became my immigrant journey in the U.S., kind of like the different ways that we see each other in America, right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's definitely a common story for all of us. Coming straight to go to school, and even in school, when I was working with actually the NYU here, they literally have clubs, and I would have, first of all, international clubs, and those international clubs are subdivided into your own culture or your own country. So, because everybody that's coming from different countries, that's international, they have Asian community, the African community, the Latino community. So I'm like, why is it so divided? It is international. And in your case, like, I'm interested in learning English. Why am I being, you know, pushed automatically? Did you ask me?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so it was very interesting. And Latinos, like you said, there is divisions, right? But I was lumped with all Latinos and mainly Mexican, right? So I'm Colombian. And so I'm kind of like, well, I learn a lot. I love the language. I love the culture. Yeah. Fell in love with it. But when I was starting, it's still different. It's like not quite the same. And so that sort of started opening a lot of it does something really interesting to you, I think. And it shows you that the world is very different and there is so many different perspectives that what you were raised with, and that they are also valid and proper perspectives, right? So we sometimes get so much into like, my way is the way, or the way I understood it is the way. Well, as an immigrant, by definition, you have to understand that this is a different country, that you're coming to their house and that you have to kind of assimilate to them. We wish they assimilated a little bit more to us, of course, but we're the ones who are burdened upon that coming in and opening it up, right? And so that personal growth has to happen. And for me, it happened pretty quickly. I learned that I needed to adapt very fast and I needed to learn the rules of what I need to do and sort of like continue my path into like a law school is what I want to do.
Gotcha. Talking about law school, you are now a lawyer, fast forward, and we have a lot of questions to go through. So currently, I mean, there's so many policies out there when it comes to immigration. Do you mind just sharing some of the key elements of the current policies that we have?
Well, as you know, immigration is a mess. Can we not? Immigration system is completely is a mess. And so typically, there's a few ways to adjust status in the United States globally. Right, there's many ways, but let's just say, so you got family cases, which is a family member can petition for you. So brothers takes forever, but you can do it through a brother. If a brother is a citizen, a brother can petition for you, or a sister, of course. But you also have your parents, or you have children. If you have children over 21, United States citizens, they could petition for you. Those are family cases. In some cases, if the person has been in the United States without permission, without they have what we believe undocumented presence, we can file in some cases what is called a provisional waiver. There's waivers available to fix those issues and then be able to finally get a green card and then adjust the status. And so that's family. We also have court cases, and this is more like federal a Board of Immigration Appeals. The EOIR, which is the Immigration for Review, which is basically the immigration court. What they can do is they could grant you asylum status, they can give you withholding, cancellation, removal. There is different figures in there. But in essence, what it is if you've been in the country for a period of time continuously, typically 10 years, you have a strong nexus to the United States. Typically, we're talking about family members. You have children under 21, maybe a spouse. You have a clean criminal record, somewhat criminal record. There's certain things that won't disqualify you, certain things will. And then you can show a extreme hardship to your nexus, to your kids, to your spouse. You could potentially stay in the United States and have a green card or a work permit or whatever other benefit may be available to you. So that is court cases. And so you got those. And then you have employment-based matters, which is like instead of being a family petition, you have an employer. An employer could petition for you and follow those. Employment, sometimes employers really need employees, and so they really say, hey, we will go wherever. And when we have a need for nurses, for example, after the pandemic, there's a big need for nurses, big need for doctors, big need for pilots. It sort of relaxed a little bit, some of the standards we're able to do. And then the last one is like what we call humanitarian cases. And this is your asylum, what's happening on the southern border of the United States. You got people asking for asylum. You get things like this, but you also have cases like VAWA, for example, which is a Violence Against Women Act. VAWA is one of the options where if a woman is subject to abuse, and this is not domestic violence, this is abuse, so it's a different standard, at the hands in a domestic relationship. So it could be a spouse, or it could be even a child that is over 21. Yeah. That person may be able to get a work permit and may be able to even fix their status through that process. So that's VAWA. Another type of case that we handle a lot is U visas. And so U visas are for victims of a crime. So if the person is victim of a crime, of a qualifying crime, and we can certify the crime, and that's that means different things. And that means that you're a victim, that the crime is a qualifying crime, and that you help law enforcement. So we have to help. And so in cases, for example, for domestic violence, many times the person places charges values, but then takes them away because of the family, because of the kids, because of many reasons, personal recant their testimony, go like, really, I don't want. So if you don't help law enforcement, they really likely won't certify that crime. So if there is certification, then we get to file for a U visa. Now, U visa right now is taking on 5 years. It's a very long process. But at the end of the day, you will be able to get your U visa, wait the required time, and then file for your green card. So there is paths through humanitarian processes that also will get us to lawful permanent residency and then later potentially citizenship. So those are kind of like the main areas, right? And so lawyers sometimes, just like, you know, Americans love division in that sense. They want to go, okay, so there is your family immigration lawyers and there's the humanitarian immigration lawyers and there's the employment lawyers. There's kind of divisions a little bit. We're trying to kind of, for us to be able to help at Quiroga Law Office, we're trying to kind of touch on all of them because we found out that there are certain tools over here that help us and there are some tools over here that help us. And so it's like a big, it's like a big puzzle, right? We have the right pieces and we just kind of have to find them and try to put the puzzle together. And so that's what is exciting. And this is why all we do is just immigration precisely because of that reason. We're not getting involved in anything else that doesn't have an immigrant component on it, right?
I've never heard of the U visa, actually. This is the first time I'm hearing it. So thank you for sharing that. So, I mean, you've been doing this for quite some time now. What are the challenges that you are seeing that as immigrants are facing currently?
Well, the current standard is the wait times. The wait times are just flat out ridiculous. I have a lot of clients that when we started working together, we told them, hey, it's going to take about a year and a half or 2 years, right? And now we are 3, 4, 5 years. So the delay times, so you know, that understandably stressed and upset and say, hey, attorney, you told me we'll take this long. Why? And we didn't make those numbers up. That when we said 2 years, it's because of what the statute said or why the visa bulletin said.
Yeah.
We have tools to give a more or less, not exact, but a reasonable expectation. Well, all of that, the government has completely disregarded it, and that's the point. So we had, in our firm, we have filed close to 97 lawsuits, or 94 to 97 federal complaints against USCIS and the federal government for unreasonable delays. And so they are fighting on the fact that the government has something called plenary power, which means because it's a matter of immigration, they can do as they please, basically. That's their take, whatever it takes us. If you have to wait a decade, that's too bad. That's their position, which is very not a good position, but that's their position. And we're having to take them to court and appeals, and we're fighting those cases. But the bottom line is that why are these delays happening? And they are happening because A, the system is very complex, it's very difficult, and B, they just not putting enough resources behind this. And so we are lacking so many immigration judges. And so each immigration judge is handling thousands of cases. They can't get past that. Same with adjudicators. It used to be that if you file for asylum, for example, I mean, they tell you you could get a work permit in about 180 days. You know, six months, you get a work permit. Well, it's not that anymore. That's what it says. That's what we're used to. But it's not uncommon to see now 10 months, a year and a half. And so how do we navigate the process when it's so incredibly delayed? And also remember, we're talking about family members here in the case of family cases. Like, you want to be your spouse, you want to be the person you love, you want to see your children.
Yeah.
I mean, telling somebody you got to wait 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, I mean, you got a 4-year-old and you have to wait 3 years to see them, they're going to be 7 or 8 by the time you see them. That is really hard on immigrants. That is really difficult. And there is so little compassion sometimes from the government, right? Again, the position is we have plenary power, we'll do what we will, you're an immigrant, you wait. And it gets complex because now the arguments we're raising is fine, we're immigrants, but what about the citizen? Because it's two people, right? And so you're a citizen petition for your child who was born in another country. It's the rights of the citizen we're talking about. We're not talking about the rights of the child itself. So we're having to get very creative and try to start figuring out how to challenge all of this. But that's, I think, we'll say currently that the wait times are just horrible. The pandemic didn't help at all, but that became the excuse. We're almost 4 years, we're only here in March, April, to the pandemic started, and you know, but they still claim that because of the pandemic, that's why they're delayed.
So I'm gonna go into undocumented individuals, because the majority of our immigrant community are undocumented, and that's most of your work that you do. What are some of the rights that our undocumented community have? Because a lot of them are not aware, they live in fear, and because of not being not knowledgeable of what they have rights to?
We have rights, not very many, but we do have rights. But because we don't enforce them, we kind of lose them. And so it's very important that they share this podcast, that they understand. First of all, it is the government's duty and burden to show that you are undocumented. So the number one issue we see when a client comes to us is that the immigrant disclose the fact that they're not documented, right? So we are told you should never lie, you can never not tell the truth, you have to be honest.
Yeah.
You good boys and little girls, you have to do that. And so what happens is, you know, I'm not telling people here to be dishonest, but what I'm telling you is that you have the right to remain silent. And so when what I see, for example, a pullover, right? Typically the person comes in and says, hey, hi, how are you? May I have your name? Hey, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Nigeria and I don't have documents. It's like, now the cop goes and writes it down, and now the government has all the proof they need to show that you don't have documents because they have your confession, right? Yeah. That's a confession. So typically, officers don't have the right to ask for immigration status unless it's an immigration officer, right? It has to be an ICE agent, a Department of Homeland Security agent, something like that. A police officer, even a state trooper, they don't have the jurisdiction. All they can say is, hey, do you have a driver license? Do you have insurance? That's it. But because we just go in and spill the beans, right? We just sort of like tell them everything. Then it makes it very hard for any immigration practitioner to go undo that. Now, there are ways, but it's very hard.
Wow. That's really interesting that you say that we shouldn't say or, you know, what our status is. Okay, that's good to know. So, but what are other than the, like not mentioning or saying right. that we are undocumented, what are some of the other rights that they have?
So this is very important because I want you to listen up. I think this idea that citizens have rights and then immigrants don't, that's not what the law says at all. It says we the people, and the people has been designed as anybody in the United States, physical right. It's not. So for example, property rights, you can own property. There is nothing that says that you cannot own property. Now, if you're going to go purchase a home, the bank, which is a private institution, the bank can make its own rules and the bank can say, show me your social security. But if you find somebody to lend you the money, or you may family members, or maybe you save all your life, you can go purchase land and that's fine, right? You can purchase land. Now, let's say that you are deported for whatever reason. You don't lose your land. That would be a taking of your rightful property. So we get so scared that, oh, I'm going to lose my car, or I'm going to lose my house. Doesn't work like that. You have rights. You have property rights. You can enforce them. You can rent the place. You can sell the place, but they can't just take it away. What happens is we get confused when this happens. People think they lost it all. They leave. And sure enough, when they come back 10 years later, it's been gone or they don't care. And they lose all their estate, everything that they work for. So I work hard with obviously, we want to avoid something like that. We want to make sure people have a green card and avoid that. But if you were to be in that position, hey, you're going to lose it all. There is tools in here to help you. So I like to think in terms of you have civil rights, like anybody else. You can go get married. That's a right or a privilege, however you want to see it. But you can do that. You can get some things. Now, some states might limit the ability to get a driver license or something like that. You got some restrictions, but it's not like that. That's a civil kind of thing. Then we have criminal rights. So criminal rights, you have the same criminal rights that if you're accused of a crime, you have the right to remain silent. You have the right to a lawyer if you cannot afford it. You have a right to a jury of your peers. You have a speedy trial. You have the same rights that a person has. Mm. Now, that's criminal rights, or civil rights. Now, for us immigrants, the world of immigration comes in, and it's really interesting because civil law, criminal law are two different worlds. If you talk to a citizen who's born here, that's what they, the world is two-dimensional. That's what they see. If you talk to an immigrant, we have a third dimension, and that's called immigration. We have immigration to be put into it. So what happens in the immigration realm is that they very, very cleverly, many, many years ago, they said immigration is part of civil law, not criminal law, civil law. This is interesting. Why? Because they wanted to avoid one specific thing, and that is if they detain you, they don't want to have to provide you with a lawyer. This is why you see immigrants, we have to pay for lawyers. We don't get detained in immigration. Now, if you get detained in a DUI, that's criminal law, the government has to appoint you at least a public defender. Mm. But in immigration, because they call it civil, which I think is really interesting because it has all the elements of criminal law. I mean, you're detained, you can be in a detention center, you have all of the restrictions on freedom at least, but they don't have to give you a lawyer. You have to afford your own lawyer or you have to defend yourself, right? And so, and this became really, really bad, kind of changed from living in the country. I don't know if you remember the cages and all all this division that was happening on the southern border.
Well, I saw that. It was so horrible.
Horrible. And you had these 3, 4, 5-year-old kids going to argue their own case before an immigration against a United States prosecutor, a United States, at least ICE counsel, which is like, wait, you went to law school, you have all this experience, and you are taking on a 5-year-old. Like, that is, and actually there was skits in Saturday Night Live and things like that, like realizing how the ridiculousness of all of it. And that's because they're saying that's civil law, right? That's like taking your driver's license away. You're taking your visa. It's rough. But those rights do exist. I mean, as far as property goes, transfer of property, if you happen to, for example, be deported, let's just say, if you're working, your wages are owed. You know, you are owed for those hours that you do, and typically employers don't say anything. Well, no, you can, hey, I work up to that day, I need my wages up to that day. We're so scared, we believe that, you know, because we were here or we already stayed a visa or something, that there is no other rights, and that's just not it. You do have rights, and it's important that you talk to an immigration attorney to at least lessen the blow. Obviously, fix the issue if we can, but if not, figure out where you are. You do have rights, and even if they're reduced to some degree, you still have them. The main thing is we don't enforce them very often.
Acha, you mentioned something very interesting that bring up this other question. Like, how do federal and state immigration laws interact?
So this is in the news all the time now, right? So it's, you know, Texas, Arizona, Florida, you know, Abbott and DeSantis and all these governors are trying to just make their own immigration laws. Really, immigration in the Constitution is completely left up to the federal government. So it is the federal government who makes these decisions, funding, immigration courts, all of that. So it's federal. This is why I can practice all over the country, because it's a federal law. So I can practice immigration as well in Florida, in Atlanta, you know, or I can do it in Spokane, Washington, Miami, whatever we want to do, I can jump all over. But states lately have been trying to get into this because they believe that the burden. So Texas, one of their position is, hey, we are burdened because there's so many immigrants coming through our border that Texas is sharing an unfair economic impact based on that. Obviously, we say, well, you're getting more individuals to the workforce. There's all sorts of debates going back and forth. But typically, they do this, and it is struck down by the law very quickly, right? It's like you have the Constitution. So it is being used a lot as a political ploy anymore. I think it's just to try to gain, you know, elections are coming up. And so we have to say, hey, let's just build a wall, and we're going to pull all these buoys. They put buoys on the Rio Grande River, and the court have to say no. And so it's being used a lot as a political thing, but really this is almost exclusively a federal law issue. States don't really have the ability to mingle too much with immigration.
I watched a documentary a while back on Netflix, and it was this lady. She had been here, I think, 20 years, and she was apparently getting deported to go to a country where she lived when she was young. Something had happened, and she never got a chance to get her citizenship. She has a family here. I believe she was in Florida. She has a family here, and she was getting deported. It was so heartbreaking for me to watch that. And my question to you is, how do you discuss, I guess, DACA, like the DACA policy?
How do we look into DACA and see? Well, DACA, again, this is another mess, but, you know. So the Obama administration, I think, here's where I think happened and where we are at. The Obama administration promised a lot on immigration, very similar to the current administration. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to have massive immigration reform. What happened is, I think President Obama has spent a lot of his political power and influence on Obamacare. And when Obamacare was done, then he tried to tackle the immigration issue, but it was over. So the best he could do was do an executive action at the end of the day and say, look, see, I did it. And it was DACA, which is childhood arrivals. People will be in the country before, you know, the age of 16. They can prove they're here at least at this age, June 15 of 2012, right? He said, okay, in 2012, he said, so 5 years back. So he backdated it to 2007. So he tried to do, so the requirements are there. They said, look, you have these requirements, you can get a work permit. And we have something called deferred action. So deferred action for childhood arrivals, that's where DACA comes from.
Yeah.
What action are they deferring? Deportation. We're simply telling you, we're not going to deport you for 2 years, and we'll give you a work permit in the meantime. That's it. That's all he was able to do. So yes, you can renew it, but they're delaying that. Now, when he put the program in place, he gave us basically three benefits. He said, okay, if you you qualify for DACA, you have ability to stay deferred action for 2 years. No, we're not going to deport you. Two, you get a work permit. And three, we're going to give you something called an advance parole. So an advance parole is basically a document in advance that if you leave the country, you can come back. Basically a travel permit. That's kind of what it was. So in advance, we're going to let you come back. Then the courts went in, everybody fought it. They said, you know, immigration is primarily, this is an act of Congress. Congress has to do that. The United States president doesn't have the ability to do this, and that's been fought forever. So they struck it down for a period of time, and what they struck down was, but they put it back, and when they put back the work permit and the deferred action, but they left out the travel permit. It has been recently that the court said, no. You have to put it back how President Obama had it. So now we're back to being able to get travel permits, right? And so we're trying to get travel permits. Now, this is critical why, for a lot of my clients who are primarily Mexican, some of them come through the border and they don't come with a visa, right? They just come in.
Yes.
So if you don't come with a visa, your entry isn't what we call inspected. You have to have an inspection, right? So think about it. It's like you came to the door and then somebody knocked on it. And if we can show that happened, you have to get inspected. Well, because they don't have that, if they're able to get a travel permit and they leave and come back, suddenly their entry now is inspected. And it gives them so many more rights to advance their position. So there is a lot of strategy that is starting to be played on. We can do that. We can do this, and this, and fix this way, right? So it's all over the place. Now, when they take it back, they said, we're going to leave the program for those people who did qualify so you can continue renewing, but we're not allowing anybody new. So new applications are not accepted. Now, then they came back and says, we're going to accept the applications, but we're actually not going to adjudicate them. So I have a lot of clients who are waiting to see what happens with their new applications and see. We'll see what happens. It's kind of the same thing. Now this election is going to come. It's going to be very close to election time. It's very possible that in order to secure re-election, this president might issue a whole new set of issues. I don't see a reform happening the way it is. They have so much opposition from the Republican side that it just is. And so at this point, we are just navigating as it goes, taking it one day at a time and trying to advance everybody's position the best we can. It's kind of...
Yeah. I mean, you keep coming back to, you know, the government and the elections coming. How do you think the immigration impact the economy?
It's a huge impact. I think the sad part is that they don't seem to want to admit that. But I mean, who builds this country? I mean, go to any construction place, right? It's immigrants. There's no way anybody who really looked into it just by going down and see it. Now, if you don't have labor, then we go down. We saw that in the pandemic, how devastating it was. Everybody was just, jobs just start getting cut because, you know, restaurants are closing you know, shipping industry is closing and all of these industries are closing. So I think the impact is massive. And really what they try to do, they relax immigration for doctors, nurses, pilots, what I'm telling you, because we need more, right? So I think it's so obvious, but there is this sort of resilience. And I'm not saying that there is no local talent. Of course there is local talent. It's just the demand is so high. We need so many hospitals and we need so many doctors and teachers and construction workers, and you name it, in any profession, there seems to be an unemployment issue, right? And we just, you know, employers have a hard time finding talent. And so I think immigration is why this country was built the way it's built. It was built on immigration, new ideas, and new people, and it's very much at the core and the fiber of what created America.
Got it. I'll take you back to undocumented immigrants. So for people that have overstayed their visa, they become undocumented. And people who've just, you know, come in with no documents, they are also undocumented. So in those cases, what can somebody do to become legal, to get their papers? What are some of the steps, I guess, they can do to get...
Right. So it kind of goes to the beginning, because otherwise we'll be talking here for days, right? So it goes generally to what I said. Okay, you got different avenues. You have an employment path, you have a family path, you have perhaps a court path, or you have a humanitarian path. And so you kind of have to see what it is. I mean, I think when individual comes to our office and says, hey, help me, and I don't really have a lot, the first thing we do is we try to say, okay, let's really start gathering your, right? Let's just really figure out, where are you? Where do you stand legally today? What do you have? Because the day that something does happen, we don't want to be in a position and go, wait, we can start, but now we got to figure out your record, and that's going to delay us. I mean, we don't get a record anymore. It's taking over a year to get the complete record. I mean, I think you can file it, and people will say, well, I got mine in 3 months. Well, what did you get? Because they send you, out of 100 pages, you get 89. I'm like, well, what happened to the rest of the pages? And so you have to really know how to read these and really navigate it to have a complete record. And remember, you're asking for photocopies. And so you send a photocopy, hey, send me a copy of my visa, or hand me a copy of my application. And the person looks at it and scans it and send them whatever they find. They don't really do a very earnest job, get you what you're looking for. Yeah. So the first thing you got to do is, I do think it's important you have your record, because that will determine a lot of things. It's something, if you don't have any basis right now, well, maybe, again, you visa, something happened, or really nothing happens to you, but something was to happen, like an assault or somebody robs you or something. Hey, you have a police report, that may open the door for you. Now we just need to look at your record, and then you file and we'll just start moving, right? So getting the record is something that I tell individuals, do it, get a lawyer to do this. Yes, in our communities, there is a lot of, in the Latino Mexican community, calling the there's a lot of people who do this type of work, but they don't do a very good job. You have to be professional. I'd rather you go to a licensed professional who can really just do this, because there is also a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation and truthfully fraud. This is just fraud with issues, and also filing the wrong thing. And so people get so desperate, right? So one of the questions I give you, we get so desperate, we're like, fine, I'm gonna file an asylum. I mean, I wanna say that it happens a lot. Colombia, oh my gosh, there's so many issues in the 90s. I'm just gonna tell the judge, look, if they catch you in a lie, they catch you with a document that does not belong to you, or something that looks Photoshop or something like that, you're done forever. The penalty of that is very high. So, please don't. And because you're so desperate, so these individuals call and, for example, they tell you, oh, I can get your work permit in 6 months. Oh, great, sign here. And then what they don't know is that they just signed an asylum application. They had no idea. So they filed the asylum application, and then deportation comes, right? It's like, it's horrible. So please do seek the advice of a lawyer. Yes, there are nonprofit with attorneys that are low cost or free. There is also private lawyers like myself. We are more expensive because we don't ask for donations. We have to do it all based on the fees that we charge. But then you got somebody to answer your questions and guide you in your specific situation.
That's really important. For me, all the advice I give to people, if you are going through immigration process, get a good lawyer. Yes, sometimes you get a free one, but I don't think they do they dedicate their time, because first of all, they are bombarded with like 10, 20 cases aside from yours. The private lawyers are more dedicated, because first of all, you're paying for their time. You're paying for what they know, and they have experience. So definitely, if you're going through immigration, get a good lawyer. And Hector is one of them. He's operating in the whole country. So it doesn't matter where you are in the country, you can definitely reach out. I have all his information in the show notes. But we're not done yet. What do you foresee, like, the in the future for immigration? What does it look like in your end, because you guys are in this space and you could see what's happening with it, with all of these delays? And
well, there are very interesting cases coming out of the Supreme Court and different 9 district, 7 district, 8 district courts of appeals that will tell us, is this concept of plenary power really going to hold water or not? Because if it doesn't, it opens all sorts of interesting ideas for litigation and things like that. I think that we're going to be headed in that direction no matter what. I also think that there is the possibility that the country is very loud anymore, right? It's just halting on immigration. Even people who don't care or just don't believe immigration is an issue, it is starting to be very loud. And I think that would be the precursor for perhaps, but willing, a reform or some sort of ways that to restructure this. Because when you're talking about waits of 4 or 5 years, in some cases, in a petition for siblings, say you're a Mexican citizen or a Mexican, and then you're also a U.S. state citizen over the age of 21, you want a petition for your brother, the wait time is over 22 years. So that's just so outside of the world, the scheme of reasons sometimes, that I think that is going to have to give at some point. So I do think there's going to be some changes coming up. I'm not sure it's going to be before or after the election. But no matter what, precisely because immigration built this country, it's got to give. It's got to give.
Hector, there's a lot of our audience everywhere in the world. And there are some medical professionals that would love to come to the U.S. What are some of the process? Like, what is the process for them? Like, can they reach out directly to you in order to, you know, get the ins and the outs of how the process is?
So that's an employment process, right? So typically what you require employment process is to have an employer sponsor you in. So typically you find a hospital or a clinic or a medical provider who's interested in your skills, and they can initiate that process. Now, if you have that secure, and that's kind of the hard part, because, yes, you know, when you're over there, you're thinking, well, what hospital is going to sponsor me? I don't know anybody. And so that's kind of the challenge, really. But once you have that and you have education, then the process is complicated. You should get a lawyer for that, but it's doable. It's what I'm saying. It's very much real.
So once if someone is here, they say their contract is 2 years. Is there something that they can do in terms of staying here?
It depends on what kind of contract we're talking about, what kind of visa. I mean, so you're a student, for example, and you're studying a master's degree or you're doing a PhD program. You can see something called, you know, education OPT, right? Which is basically they give you a time, couple of years, to work in an internship and work here, so you get experience on your field, on your chosen field. But typically after those 2 years, that's it. They will not renew it. Now, if you are in other kinds of visas, they are renewable. So it kind of depends on how that contract came about, that I will have to look and see, okay, well, can we renew it? Can we not renew it? Let's say it's the one that you can. So typically, remember, you can change. This is what I was saying. It's very important in an office like mine that can actually look at different areas and try to figure out. So this person's coming from an employment position, but maybe this person is seeing somebody and they decide to get married. So we're going to jump into a family case, and that person can fix, if that's the case, through family. Maybe that person will invest, or maybe that person happened to have been a victim for some time of something that happened many years ago and they didn't even remember, right? But maybe we can file a U visa. So there is different things. Or maybe they can go back to be a student. They can re-enroll in another educational program, and then we go back from OPT back to a student visa and try to extend the time to see while the person is here if anything changes, right? If they need somebody or whatever, or they want to stay through, find an employer that is going to sponsor the whole thing. So it's kind of a lot of the work of the immigration lawyer is to try to figure out a strategy, and a lot of it is buying time, right? To see if the window opens, right? That's kind of, unfortunately, what we are against with the current complex immigration system.
To all of our listeners and viewers, guys, no matter where you are in your status, immigration-wise, you can reach out to Hector, and Hector can, you could work with him to see exactly where you fall in. He's given a lot of different options as to where anybody can fall in. Having said that, where can our listeners and find reliable information on immigration law?
So if you can look at QuirogaLawOffice.com, so that's Quiroga LawOffice.com, and then all of our contact information is there. You can reach out to the office. They can have an appointment with one of my staff members, or they can have an appointment with me. There is a consultation fee is directly, but usually with the staff is at least we can see there's something there, yeah, before going and spending too much money. Let's try to figure out what you got, something if we can help you. So reach out and then we'll be glad to try to do the best we can to answer the questions that you call.
Okay, but you speak Spanish and English, right?
Speak Spanish and English, correct.
Got it. Okay. Is there anything else we haven't talked about? Because we've gone through a lot of processes and, you know, is there anything that is on your heart that you want to share to our community?
Yeah. Listen, so I've been practicing now for 15 years, law, and then, you know, I did it. I live it myself. I understand what it is to have a work permit and get a green card, become a citizen. I went through this process, and I got to tell you something, like you immigrants, right? We have that immigrant, what we call it, one of the core values of my firm. We got six different core values, but one of them is immigrant mentality. And that is just that resilience, that optimism, that hope, right, at war something's gonna get better, because if you don't have that, you'll be beat up every day. It'll be really difficult. So you have to have that. I said, I love that. And so just keep on keeping on, keep up the good fight. You know, it's going, things will change, have faith, put faith on God, and things will follow.
Yeah, definitely well said. I mean, this has been very informative. I wanted us to connect for a quick update on what's happening in our immigration world. It's forever changing, and it's always good to get an update on what the new policy is going to look like and what the future looks like as well. And for anybody, because people are wondering, there's a lot of people going through a lot of processes, and if your lawyer is not doing what you're expecting, it doesn't hurt to consult with a different lawyer as well. And a lot of our people are very honest. They can do it, they cannot do it. Maybe there's somebody else, they refer you to someone who can handle your case for you. But this has been amazing, very informative. And I would love to have you back with different updates on what's happening maybe next year. It's been really an honor to have you on. I want to thank you for your time and for sharing your story openly with us. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy, and everybody from Concrete Pastures audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That's it on today's episode. It's truly an honor to serve each and every dreamer. Concrete Pastures now provides targeted services to dreamers coming to the U.S. of A. We assist you to successfully integrate. We are here to support you as you write your new chapter. Kindly check out our services in the link tree. Until next time, keep dreaming.
Born and raised.